This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, I welcome your telephone calls for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Susan joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. If you have questions about diet and nutrition, give us a call. Susan will do her best to help you. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find Susan on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions are invited this afternoon about diet and nutrition. 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
Summer is now underway.
Summer is here, yes.
Yeah. A little rainy, a little sunny today. By the end of the week, though, it's going to be a scorcher.
We better think about what to drink.
Yep. Tips for hydration.
Yeah, I think now is a really good time to talk about fluids and just how much our body does need. I think we forget that our bodies are about 70% fluid. And so, you know, most of our bodies are fluid, whether it's blood, the other fluid in our body. So it's so important when it gets warm to really stay on top of that fluid-wise and to think about what you're drinking. I mean, that's really the key. One of the things that we don't often think about is when we do get up in the morning, people love to weigh themselves in the morning. And of course, that's because we weigh less in the morning. And we do lose quite a bit of fluid while we sleep. So even just a simple thing of if you weigh yourself periodically before you go to bed and in the morning, it may be a couple pounds down anyway. And 1 pound is 16 ounces of water. So if you think of it that way, and most of us are down at least 2 pounds in the morning. So basically, we get up in the morning, we're probably already down 32 ounces. So that's a good rule of thumb to just start thinking, oh, within the first couple hours in the morning, try to get about 32 ounces in to try to replenish what you might have lost while you sleep. Just breathing in and out, you lose a lot of fluid. And especially important in the summer, just because if you're behind on fluid when you get up and you don't start rehydrating early and it's warm and you're outside and you could get dehydrated so much more quickly. So starting with more fluid in the morning is really important now. And then knowing that when you do drink something with caffeine, it doesn't dehydrate you as much as we once thought from the research that's come out recently, but there is still some dehydrating effect. So if you do have a cup of coffee, have some water with it. You know, just try to think about having, if you have caffeine, have extra fluid from water. That's helpful as well. And then to really, throughout the day, plan yourself so you have water sitting here. We both have liquids to drink here, which is good. And making sure that you certainly stay on top of that.
Yeah. I went to your book this morning, 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and I thought this is something that we might want to talk about this afternoon as the weather forecast has such a heat and humidity coming up at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is interesting to think about a little bit that maybe we don't think about so often is you have a tip in here of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. Number 48 is eat to hydrate.
Right.
And there are a lot of delicious foods here that are 80% water or more.
Exactly.
So that's another way to stay on top of the hydration issue. And, you know, this sounds good. Watermelon, of course, papayas, honeydew melon, peaches, pears, yogurt, cucumbers, applesauce, iceberg lettuce.
Right.
Cottage cheese, even, 80%.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about fluid in your body, a lot of that is what you take and you drink. We usually think about that as water, but everything you take in fluid-wise is helpful. And then, of course, like you say, a lot of these foods, if you take in, for example, 2 cups of watermelon, which is also very low calorie, by the way. So if you take in 2 cups of watermelon, you're going to get about 1.5 cups of water out of that. And so there's 1.5 cups of your, let's say, 60 to 80 ounces that most of us need in a day or more. And so that's exactly right. That really helps a lot. Having a fruit salad, having something like a smoothie, for example, that might also fill you up and taste good, but it's mostly fluid. And even, as you mentioned, something like yogurt, which people don't really think of, but that is definitely mostly fluid. And so that's an easy way, or a frozen yogurt bar or something. You know, one of the best things you can do in the summer, and kids love this, of course, is just maybe blend up yogurt and any kind of fresh fruit or frozen fruit, mm-hmm. and then just pour them into freezer containers where you can actually make homemade popsicles like that and just freeze those. You could freeze 10 of those at a time, pull those out, and you're getting almost all fluid, plus you're getting some protein and calcium and extra fruit, and that would be so much better than buying maybe just the sweetened popsicles, too.
Yeah. Also, it's, you know, over the years as we've talked and I've had mm-hmm. other people on the program, we think of diet and nutrition as work. And really, maybe that's where we run into trouble
right.
with that. You know, we all know it's eat less and exercise more.
Right.
But that makes it sound like work. And so we're always talking about deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about all the wonderful possibilities.
Exactly. And eating is really fun. I mean, it's meant to be fun. It's meant to be positive, and we're supposed to eat things we like and enjoy. And there's always, you know, it's so true that there's always room for everything in what you eat. And it is a matter of, I tell my clients, a little bit of planning goes a long way when it comes to nutrition, because so much of it is having some of these things available, just like the fresh fruit. Well, most people really love fresh fruit. There aren't too many people who don't like to eat it. And most people will say, well, if it's around, I'll eat it. And if it's cleaned, I'll eat it. You know, something as simple as slicing up an apple, we tend to eat that better than just one apple sitting there. And all these little things that take maybe a minute or two, but overall, the benefit is so huge, and you end up eating things that you really enjoy. And especially now, I was at the farmer's market on Saturday, and even though, again, it's not, there's not a lot there yet, but just going around and seeing all the greens and starting to see the color and just, of course, all the flowers that were out there and plants and things. And it's such a really wonderful thing to see this fresh food. And it's really fun to eat it when you actually get it local. And so the more we can do that, and of course, that's really the push now, too. So it's very exciting, just in terms of having fun with food that way as well.
So we should focus on variety and taste and
right, and
the enjoyment of of food.
Yes.
Why do you think we've gotten into this habit of focusing on deprivation? Can't, shouldn't,
right.
don't.
I think part of what happens is we get all of our recommendations, or most of our recommendations come out from these national guidelines, which we have to have. And it so happens that the last many years, our national guidelines have really focused on obesity, which is important. Obviously, we have a big problem with obesity in this country. And so what happens is that a lot of things are geared towards, okay, how do you cut down on weight? And then how do you cut things out? And how do you stop eating this much? And how do you exercise more? And all that, again, has to be talked about. But I think in the midst of all that, you do lose what's really important, which is how do you find a way to enjoy eating and learn how to cook more and try different foods. And basically, when we expand our palate and really expand what we're trying and what we're eating, naturally we're going to eat healthier. So if we do that first and try to focus on why that's fun and why that's enjoyable, then most people, as a secondary thing, will probably be healthier and maybe lose some weight in the process. And so I had a client just today. We were working on, you know, really kind of changing the whole lifestyle of how she's eating. And she said, boy, I feel so good. You know, I feel so much energy. She said, I never thought I'd feel so much energy just in a week of kind of changing how she's looking at eating and incorporating different things that she likes that she just really hadn't gotten at the store. And that's what you want to have, because we're not even looking at weight loss right now. That's maybe a goal too down the road. But the main thing now is just to kind of figure out how to work food together so that it's things that she enjoys and can cook quickly. And that's really the base of it, because I do totally believe that that coming back to figuring out where the food comes from and what kind of things you really do like, because so often we just eat to get filled up. And we don't really know if we even like the food or if it tastes good to us, or, you know, often things more processed they are, they really don't usually taste as good. And so getting back to what are these real flavors that come to us naturally is so great.
Yeah. And also the same goes for exercise. I know when you came in this afternoon, you were talking about going to the pool, your daughter's learning to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another great thing, you know, rather than talk about have to,
right,
should, gotta, it's like, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Besides, you burn a lot of calories going all the way up to the top of those slides. And so, and you don't think of it that way because
yeah.
you're just thinking, I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you're exercising. And swimming is just such a great example because anybody being in the water is going to get benefit from it just by moving around a little bit because you get the resistance of the water. But you never think of it that way when you're in the pool. You're just splashing around, having fun, and
keeping cool.
Keeping cool. So yeah. It works out great.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Listeners, if you've got a question about diet or nutrition, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, as usual, you brought a couple of handouts today.
I did.
Helpful handouts. And one of them you just described very briefly to me when you came into the studio this afternoon, and it's about, well, as we're on the subject of exercise maybe now, the role antioxidants play in exercise. You want to tell us about
that? You bet. Well, we think about the term antioxidants. One thing I look at with that term is thinking about foods that maybe have an extra role in keeping your cells healthy. So we know when we are more active, we might get more sore. We pull our muscles a little bit apart in our muscle tissue, and we certainly need to think about, well, what can I eat that might have an extra benefit of keeping my cells healthy and helping repair tissue, maybe decreasing inflammation. And so when we look at foods with particular antioxidants, one way is to look at that is color. So, of course, you know, some of the things I've listed here, oranges, tangerines, grapefruit, well, citrus fruits are real high in antioxidants, are real high in vitamin C and other vitamins, and that's an easy way to grab some of these in. Things like broccoli, cauliflower, spinach, and asparagus, those are particularly high nutrients, a lot of those studied right here at the U of I. Any kind of berries. And, of course, we see a lot more berries now. I've noticed that several of the grocery stores have had frozen berries on sale a lot lately, and those work great in smoothies. And so cranberries, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, purple grapes, because they're a little bit higher in certain antioxidants because of the color. Looking at the melons, as we mentioned, even things like sweet potatoes. You know, it's really easy actually in a microwave to bake a sweet potato in the microwave if you want that as your side. And, of course, you look at that orange, you say, that's got to be good for me because it looks so great. Even things like onions, peppers, and garlic. You know, there have been a lot of studies on garlic and cholesterol reduction, immune function. It may not have the powerful properties for reducing cholesterol, but we know it's beneficial for the immune system. And just thinking about adding more things like herbs and spices, onions, peppers, garlic as you cook, because those are ways to actually get some more natural antioxidants in too. And then things like salmon, tuna, sardines, the omega-3 fats, flaxseed oil, those kinds of things, and looking at nuts and seeds and peanut butter that might have more of those good fats, too. So I think there's a whole list of foods that, you know, I tend to think that if we see lists, if we put them on a refrigerator, if we have things in front of us, it's just another reason we're going to look at that, and next time we go to the store, maybe we're going to pick up a few more of those things, and thinking about starting to do maybe a little bit more activity in the summer, even things like mowing the lawn, where you're going out and doing things you wouldn't normally do. You think, well, getting more of these particular foods in there certainly is helpful when your body's trying to repair.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener. Now, caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Dr. Susan, would you be a good fellow and take up the question of the French paradox, resveratrol? And while we're at it, we might add coenzyme Q10 and its various formulas and their bioavailability. I'll ring off and listen. Thank you.
Okay, and we want to tell folks that Susan is a great registered dietitian. She has a master's degree, but no, she's not a doctor.
No PhD or no MD, but thank you for the call. Certainly resveratrol is a potent antioxidant. There are many, coenzyme Q10 as well. resveratrol you might think of as the red wine, or again, the French paradox. Well, are you getting extra nutrients that come from red wine or come from these dark purple or red grapes? And certainly resveratrol you can get in supplemental form as well as in the natural food component itself. And certainly there have been a lot of studies looking at cancer prevention, looking at heart disease prevention with that particular food component. So that's another one to consider. Coenzyme Q10 has function in the body in a lot of biochemical processes, and it's naturally in the body, but you can also certainly get it in a supplemental form. There are certain times, for instance, if you're taking a statin cholesterol-lowering medication, or maybe if you have a particular disease state, it's been studied quite a bit with Parkinson's, for example, that maybe helps the body utilize the nutrients better and helps your body work in some enzyme functions better with coenzyme Q10. So that is something you might see in supplemental form too, and those are still being studied. Like most nutrients, you know, studying them in a supplemental form is very different than the food form. We might see correlations from people who tend to eat more resveratrol or more of the red wine or purple grapes that we know can be helpful for cardiovascular disease. And then taking it out into a supplemental form, we're seeing more studies now on the actual supplements and how, yes, for some people, maybe they can get them in food, maybe they can get them in supplements as well. And so one thing, you know, to look at with any supplement, because I think a lot of people are using more supplements all the time, is to see, well, gosh, a couple questions I ask. Is there a certain disease state that you're really trying to modify it or trying to help? And maybe a supplement can be useful for that. Will the supplement, as far as we know, interact with any medications you're taking? That's really a big question, because some we know about and some we don't know about. For a lot of supplements, even before you go in for any type of surgery, you know, physicians will want you to go off everything because there could be some interaction, or some of these could be blood thinners and things too. So we look at those, and then we also look at, well, what do the studies say in terms of how much might be beneficial?
Mm-hmm.
And so I end up doing a lot of that with my clients as far as, okay, what might be beneficial mm-hmm. for you? How much would you take? And then, of course, making sure your physician or your healthcare mm-hmm. provider coordinator knows about all these things, because sometimes there are other interactions with things that you might be doing or taking. So,
and also if you're pregnant or planning to become pregnant or nursing, also
right.
critical.
Right, exactly. And I think there's also a different level with kids, because a lot of studies we have are in adults. They may not be in kids. So trying to figure out what's an appropriate amount for children. And of course, many things are helpful, and we just have to figure out what's going to be right and maybe not too much. And there are a lot of really good resources out now. I know we've mentioned a few, but a couple that I use a lot on the web. One is the Consumer Lab website, which I know I've mentioned before. It's just consumerlab.com, and that's where they actually pick supplements off the shelves, and they do their own testing and then have reviews where they can say, well, which companies really passed? They didn't have any other compounds in them. They weren't have any problem with, you know, an additional supplement that wasn't listed on the label and so on, and it had the correct amount in them. So that's a big help, too, because that's one of the big questions now with so many companies trying to make sure you get supplements that are pure, quality, mm-hmm. exactly what you need, and most companies do a great job of that, so generally it's not a problem. But whenever those reviews come out, typically there are maybe 5 or 10% of the ones that are tested that have something else in them or don't have the correct amount or something, too.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Decatur on line 4. Hi.
I was wondering about this supplement called L-Arginine. I'm not sure if I pronounced it correctly. Mm-hmm. A-R-G-I-N-I-N-E.
Yes, L-Arginine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it it's touted for these days, and what dosage would you recommend to use that?
Well, arginine itself is an amino acid compound, and it's typically been studied in, and I'll tell you, when I first knew about this is when I was doing my dietetic internship. So that was about 20 years ago, and it was being studied quite a bit in the Boston area at the time and many other places as well. To maybe help with blood flow. So to help with blood flow with cardiovascular disease. So looking at, if you took this supplement, would it enhance the blood flow to the heart muscle? So that's one thing that's being looked at. It's also certainly marketed to increase certain hormones that might enhance energy in the muscle when someone is strength training or trying to increase muscle size. Been looked at for immune status, for wound healing, all kinds of things. And so, but typically the way that it's thought of, you know, in the main sense is more for cardiovascular disease and does it help with blood flow and heart function. You know, if we look at where it's found in meat. It's, of course, we think about that, meat, beans, fish, eggs, things like that. Typically, the dosages are, you know, anywhere from 500 milligrams, maybe even up to 3 or 4 grams or even more in some studies. And so it's very, you know, it might vary depending upon the study that you use. A lot of cardiovascular studies use, you know, I'm going through a few studies that I have here in front of me too, you know, 3 grams in one study, 6 grams in another study, and so on, that looked at blood flow. And so I think it's most popular right now in supplements called NO2 supplements or nitric oxide supplements, or there are supplements like NO Explode and all these different ones that are marketed to athletes to increase blood flow as they're getting in other supplements, maybe to help with strength training. And so that's where I have a lot of athletes who have looked at these supplements and taken them. A couple go ahead.
Any drug interactions with this, with other medications?
Well, at the lower doses, I'm not aware of any, and I'm looking at some of the safety stuff from what I have in front of me, too, and no human studies testing the safety of long-term use, which is a typical problem, you know, of long-term use of these supplements. We don't think it potentially causes problems, but there are no real long-term safety studies. But we would expect at those lower levels. I mean, that's one thing you always want to look at a supplement. Typically at the lower levels that are more like food levels. For instance, you know, there might be a gram and a half in 3 ounces of meat. So you think, well, if you're taking 3 or 4 grams, that's a lower level. That's obviously a smarter way to do it because you're more at normal food levels as well. But what I've seen lately, I can just say from personal experience, I've had some athletes who have had actually some problems with certain arginine supplements that are in combination with other strength building supplements, in that they have felt a difference in blood flow. And actually a couple players that I've worked with have actually had trouble with headaches and trouble with really changes in blood flow to the point that it really was detrimental to them. So there's a real concern, at least for the athletic standpoint, that these arginine-based supplements, people want to take a very close look at, because we have very little data on the safety of those and how they might have side effects, which obviously I've seen some with these changes in blood flow and major headaches. But that's really the question right now, is at least they're marketed primarily for the cardiovascular disease, which has been studied somewhat, but that would be something obviously you'd want to talk with your physician. And then in terms of strength training, if you took something like arginine, then you'd want to make sure that you weren't at any risk for any blood flow changes or you know, changes in heart rate that might affect that. And right now, you know, my general recommendation to athletes is to, let's wait till we get more studies on the safety of these for athletic performance before you take them, because basically we don't know that much about the side effects, although I've certainly seen some problems.
Well, you said it's been studied for, you were looking at it 20 years ago, so they really don't have any data even after 20 years then.
Well, the one question is always, if you're going to use something like this therapeutically, then how long could you possibly use it? Most of the studies, and some that I'm looking at right now, you know, mostly studied maybe 6-week or 8-week studies, and maybe even 3-month studies, but longer. And of course, people, if you're going to take a supplement, they're probably going to take it more than 3 months or something. So that's always a concern with a lot of these different supplements. So again, that's where you'd want to say, well, if you did take it, probably it's smarter to take it at the dose, you know, that would be closer to what you'd get in food. And here's an example, 3.5 ounces of beef, 1.4 milligrams. 1 cup of garbanzo beans, 1.4 milligrams. 3 ounces of salmon, 1.2 milligrams. So, you know, if you looked at that, and even that's very low, but of course, even these low doses might even be 1 or 2 or 3 grams. So that's still, a lot more than what you're going to find in food for sure. But that would be one thing to kind of look at for safety wise. So it might be that it's a supplement that, you know, certainly could be helpful. I would think of it more as a therapeutic supplement, like a medication. So if you did want to take something like that, definitely do it with your doc to make sure that, hey, if it does really enhance blood flow for you, if it helps with cardiovascular, you'd want to take that in conjunction with any other medications that might be helping you with that as well.
Is it affects hormones, and how does it affect hormones?
Well, I'm not sure physiologically exactly what it does, but it certainly, when you think about blood flow is related to a lot of different hormones. And so as an amino acid, it seems to me that partly what it does is it helps with the enzyme reactions that enhance blood flow in the body. But, you know, don't quote me on that because I don't know exactly the mechanism. But
yeah. And then again, here's why Susan is emphasizing talk with your physician.
Mm-hmm.
So okay.
Definitely.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we go to Effingham, listener on line one. Hi.
I just have a short question. Can you explain the difference between pharmaceutical-grade supplements and the kind you'd buy at Walgreens or Walmart or someplace like that? Do you get more benefit from pharmaceutical-grade supplement, or is it about the same, or are you throwing your money away because they're quite a bit more expensive?
Well, that brings up a good question. I think, you know, one of the big questions with supplements right now is the purity and quality of supplements. And so when you think of pharmaceutical grade supplements, typically we're thinking of supplements, and this isn't always the case, but there are a lot of supplements that are tested and they're actually looked at from outside companies for quality and purity, just like a medication is. And the FDA doesn't do that now as a whole. There's not any overseeing regulation, which is the big concern, is that some companies are doing a great job in doing all that and some aren't. And so, you know, typically I think of pharmaceutical grade, or I would think of it even more from a company that would treat their supplement almost like a medication. In other words, they're doing the quality and purity tests and those things. That's what I look for. And whether that's considered pharmaceutical grade or not, that's what we really want to know. We want to know, does the company have testing going on? Do they have outside testing where they're actually pulling these supplements off the shelves and checking and seeing if it's completely, safe and has exactly what it says in it? That would be the quality that we would look for in terms of the supplement. And so that brings another question, is that a lot of supplements will be the same things, but one might cost 3 or 4 times what the other one does. And so to me, if they're tested and you can figure out the testing on both companies and they say they've got what they say in them and it's completely pure and everything, then to me, both of those would be okay, even if one costs a lot more than the other and one's deemed pharmaceutical grade, if that makes sense. So the thing that I always look for is the quality and the purity and the outside testing and what can the company provide in terms of their testing. And if those things are all in order, then we can be pretty sure that that's a great, it would be very similar to taking a medication that would be tested in a very similar way.
But is there any difference in how the supplement is manufactured? To have the label pharmaceutical grade, do they have to do something different or special to that supplement that makes it unique from what you buy
right
in the store?
You know, I wish I could answer that. I don't know for sure. That would be a good question for your pharmacist, because I don't know for sure if it's actual pharmaceutical grade, if it has to be processed a completely different way or if it has to go through an additional testing mechanism. I know there are a lot of different outside testing manufacturers that are, you know, giving quality of approval and seal of approval now. It's not just one organization doing that. So I don't know if that's more of a marketing term or if that is more of an actual term. To me, it wouldn't mean as much as, you know, personally working with supplements as looking at these other things that I've mentioned. But I don't know exactly what that has to mean to be considered pharmaceutical grade.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon, Susan Kundrat. She's a registered dietitian. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She works to develop personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's also an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. No one waiting at the moment to talk with Susan. 333-9455, 800-222-9455.
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it kind of got me thinking about with the different supplements, too, and just how confusing it is out there for people to try to figure out the safety. And again, I'm sure I go way overboard on the area of safety, partly because I've worked with a lot of people who have done very well with supplements. It's been so helpful for them. And then I've worked with some who've had some major problems from taking different supplements. One example is we think of B vitamins, for example, which are really important. And for many people, they do need some additional Bs. And someone has cardiovascular disease, it's important to be on a bit more B vitamins. And certainly for a lot of other reasons, it could be helpful to take additional Bs. But there even B vitamins, which are water-soluble vitamins, there is a point at a real high level where those could be problematic too. And I've certainly had clients I've worked with who have had nerve problems and things because they've taken so many B vitamins where once they get off those, they get rid of the tingling in the nerve, or potential nerve damage. And so I think it's just really important to try to make sure that if you're taking something extra, again, I can't stress enough that, some physicians will be more well-versed on supplements than others. But the important thing is that whoever coordinates your medical care at least knows what you're taking, and then, working with someone who can help you look these things up and figure out. And pharmacists is a great place to look, too, as well,
Okay. We've got some listeners now who'd like to talk with you, Susan. Next, we're going to go to a listener on a cell phone, line one. Hi.
Hi. I recently added three supplements, and I wanted an opinion about what you think about them. One is ginkgo biloba. One is L-glutamine, and one is L-lysine. And I did this all for better blood flow to the brain.
Okay, well, yeah, let me go through the ginkgo biloba, actually, was just recently studied. It was just recently reviewed because basically that's an herb that has been looked at to help with blood flow, like you say. And there were some original studies on dementia or particularly Alzheimer's with that supplement, maybe helping with Alzheimer's patients with thinking more clearly and better blood flow to the brain. One of the new studies that just came out did not show improvement in mental performance with preventing dementia. And the big question with ginkgo biloba is, does it help people who are healthy to begin with? That's the question, which we don't have a lot of data to show that it does. It might, but we don't know for sure. So that's one of the real question marks still. Some studies, this big one that recently came out, did not show benefit. But again, there'll be others. And then the glutamine and lysine are two other amino acids that in some studies have been shown to be helpful with a lot of different things. Those would be amino acid supplements that we would want to look to. I mean, one thing I would look at in your diet, are you getting enough amino acids? Are you getting a good breakdown of amino acids? And we don't know for sure whether those two, again, would be necessary to necessarily help with blood flow, let's say, and help with brain function and clear thinking and those kinds of things. In small amounts, they're probably not harmful, but that's something that probably is yet to be determined, again, as far as using them for that purpose. But I think that those are good examples of things that show promise, but I'm not convinced that they're necessarily going to really have a benefit from what we know right now, if that makes sense.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign County, line two. Hi.
Hi. My wife has been working with her doctor in regard to osteoporosis, and medications apparently are not functioning well because she's still losing height and she's 60 years old. Her diet is supplemented with additional calcium and magnesium, And is there anything else that might be considered to try to restore the absorption of calcium?
Well, there are a couple other nutrients, too. We certainly look at magnesium with calcium, and obviously we look at vitamin D, too. And she maybe, if she's been treated for this, has maybe been tested to determine her vitamin D levels. But that's something that has really been in the forefront lately because we've seen now that there have been many people and many studies where bone strength has been hampered and also osteoporosis is enhanced by low vitamin D levels.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something that's very important for people around this part of the country where we just don't get that much vitamin D as well, naturally from the sun. And so those would be things I'd look at. Also vitamin K, because vitamin K is important for bone building too. And some supplements will have vitamin K in them and other ones won't. And so that might be something that either to think about supplementing, or vitamin K is found in a lot of vegetables, in particular leafy greens. And
she's a big salad eater.
Yeah, so that's good. So
mustard greens and not just plain lettuce, but a variety of greens.
That's fantastic. I'm sure that's helpful, too. And then, of course, which you may already know, but we definitely look at things like strength training, bone building, anything that we can enhance bone strength.
Yeah, the weight-bearing, we live on a farm. She's active and can work around the farm.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like she's doing a great job. And then, of course, I look to make sure someone's getting enough to eat and making sure their protein intake is high enough as well. You know, protein needs tend to increase a bit as we get older when we're trying to maintain lean muscle mass and strength. And so,
basically vegetarian, and, you know, we do fish,
mm-hmm.
but not a lot beyond that.
Yeah, I would look at that too because, you know, typically at the very least you want about a half a gram of protein per pound of body weight in a typical day.
We'll look at the protein level and vitamin K. We do soy protein, that's a main source of protein in
mm-hmm.
our diet. Let's see, last night I made bean burgers. So.
That sounds good. And the soy protein is an excellent source for you, too, for bone health. So, you know, I think sometimes people just aren't, they're getting some, but they're not getting enough. And so that
okay.
would be worth looking at, too.
And what was the per pound on protein?
Half a gram per pound anyway.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that would be a good place to start.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana, line 3. Hi.
Hi. Two things. One, with regard to the memory stuff and brain. Just finished reading a book whose author I heard on Talk of the Nation back in April. I happened to be in Ohio, and I heard her, and I thought, this is an interesting book to get. It's called Carved in Sand. The author is Catherine Ramin, R-A-M-I-N.
Okay.
And she was having memory loss problems. She couldn't recognize people that she'd met 50 times. She couldn't recognize them, among other things. And she was a journalist, and she decided to treat this as a journalistic problem and use herself as a guinea pig. And the book talks about the whole range of things that can affect memory and what kinds of things you can do to build a cognitive reserve. I thought it was fascinating. It doesn't just deal with Alzheimer's. There's some pages on Alzheimer's, but there's a whole range of things from medications to hormones to attention deficit disorder, thyroid. I thought it was very informative. So that's one thing. And then the other is I happened to be listening late one weekend night to WILL and heard a program. I don't usually have it on at late on a weekend, and it was The People's Pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the part of the program where they invited listeners to call in with home remedies that worked for them, and somebody called in and said they'd been taking glucosamine chondroitin and it had given him severe vertigo, so he'd stopped taking it. And this little bell clicked, and I thought, I've been taking some just to protect my knee joints because I'm not a spring chicken anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I had noticed that I felt a little lightheaded at times, or I felt like I had to focus on my balance. I didn't feel as steady on my feet as I had been. And I hadn't been taking the full dose that the package says you're supposed to, but I thought, well, I'll try stopping it. And this concern about my balance went away. Do you know anything about this?
Well, I have never heard that with glucosamine. The one thing that comes to my mind is that we're careful if someone takes glucosamine chondroitin if they're diabetic, because it's a glucose-based molecule, so sometimes it can change blood sugar. It can have an effect on blood sugars. And so, you know, that potentially makes sense, that if it was, in your case, affecting blood sugars a little bit, you might be a little lightheaded, or your blood sugar might be up and down a little bit more than typical for someone. So in that sense, I could see where it could certainly, you know, affect maybe how you felt based on blood sugar changes. I've never really seen any studies on vertigo, but certainly doesn't mean that can't be a problem. But I would be related more to the blood sugar issue that I am always kind of aware of if someone's taking it, or particularly if they've got other issues with blood sugar.
Well, if it were blood sugar, wouldn't a feeling of lightheadedness be sustained over, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, an hour sort of thing, as opposed to momentary feelings of that?
Well, I think it would depend on how it's absorbed and when it gets into your system. It might depend on other things, too. I mean, usually we've not seen, at least from reports I've seen, there hasn't been a problem with people managing blood sugar at all on this, unless they maybe have diabetes to begin with. And then we're watching that and how it is being affected with other medications and things. So
I don't even know that lightheadedness was the best way to describe it. It was more as though I just had to pay attention to my balance, and I thought, I don't like this. What's going on here? So anyway, I share that in case other people happen to know about things. I didn't associate it with taking the glucosamine chondroitin. I wasn't even taking it totally religiously. Sort of most days I would take one pill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thanks a bunch. And I do recommend the book, and I thought that the author was really engaging and had other things to say in addition to what she had in the book. So
okay. Well, thanks for the call. I'm going to jump in here because we've got a couple of other callers I hope to squeeze in here before we run out of time. Next, we go to Clinton, Indiana, line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I was listening to WGN last Friday, and there was a man advertising a book that he wrote. I can't remember his name, but the book was all about high blood pressure. Did you hear him?
I did not hear that, unfortunately. No.
Well, I was wondering what that book could have been about, or was it recommended?
Sorry, I don't think we're going to be able to help you out on that one. You might, I would imagine GN has a website. You might go online and see if you can figure it out that way, or if you don't have a computer at home, you could get to the library or something like that.
You mean call WGN and ask them?
No, I didn't say that. I said get online, get on your computer and see if you can figure out, you have the date and the time, and you're on your way, I think. That's the best advice we can offer. Okay, one more call. Listener in Champaign, line 1. Hi.
Hi, I just had a question about whey protein isolate that one of my kids is taking along with weightlifting. It seems to give pretty dramatic results. He's careful about, you know, plenty of fluid intake. Are there downsides to this?
Well, whey protein isolate generally is fine. It would be, you know, typically after a workout or taking it just in addition in the day for extra protein is a great source of protein, and there shouldn't be any downside to that. Typically, a scoop is about 20 grams of protein at a time, which is a good amount. And again, the main thing is just total amount. You know, you just don't want to go over your total amount if you're adding that in. So, again, at the very high level, if somebody's trying to increase strength training, probably no more than 1 gram per pound of body weight of total protein. That'd be whatever he's taking in the whey protein isolate, other foods. And, you know, that'd be the only concern, is you don't want to go crazy and take so much of that then it does tend to become dehydrating or be hard for your kidneys to break down. But, you know, typically a serving or two a day when you're strength training is maybe enough extra protein along with eating well that it can really help and give a little bit of an extra boost.
Okay. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Our thanks this afternoon to the listeners who called in and to our guest, Susan Kundrat. She's a registered dietitian. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net.